Okay, before we start, I get my my second marketing plug in. This has been my my sweat over the last, since about January this year. McGraw-Hill came to me last November and asked me to write a book for them, sort of based on Hard Right Edge and the concepts in Hard Right Edge. I don't know if I'll ever make any money from it, but when McGraw-Hill comes and asks you to write a book for him, you just can't say no because you're not going to get asked a second time. I know there are a lot of trading books out there. The good thing for me, in terms of me being a capitalist, is two things. Number one, I think the book's excellent. I'm really proud of what I've done with it. Number two, if you type in the word swing trading in Amazon, you come up with 6 entries. If you type the word day trading in Amazon, you come up with 800 entries. So I think the subject matter is very timely, and for some reason, the publishers haven't really jumped on it. In fact, it's a good place to start our third session here, because it really says a lot about what's going on in the world. As we identify you and your place in the trading community and whether or not that place is appropriate or not. Go ahead and flip. This will be coming out in December. It'll be available everywhere. I believe you'll even find it on your neighborhood bookstore. They're going to give it wide release, and I really appreciate McGraw doing that. Identifying your place in the spectrum of things. You know, one of the reasons that you don't find swing trading books around much is that it's in very few people's interest inside the industry to put swing trading on you. I just came back from the online trading expo in Ontario, California, about 3 weeks ago. And for all the talk about swing trading and in the press, and everybody's moving to swing trading, everybody's leaving day trading, blah, blah, blah. You go look at the vendors there and the exhibitors there, nobody was trying to push anything in swing trading. Not a soul. And the main reason is software vendors and brokers can't really make money on it. They're committed to you increasing your ticket frequency. They are committed to you taking very, very short-term trades as they stay in business. Swing traders don't require as extensive or as expensive software as day traders do. So the software industry isn't really interested in you swing trading either. That just sort of leaves like educators like myself, who thinks swing trading is still a pretty good idea. You're never going to see it be a mass movement because it's always existed already. And it's not in anybody's capitalist interest or personal profit interest to push it. So let's define you here. We've got to define, are you swing traders? Are you day traders? Are you investors? Are you, somebody said, investidors, tradedors, tradevestors? You know, there's all kinds of names these days. You know, each of you has your holding period, but if you're trading the wrong one, you're going to probably fail. So you have to be real wise in picking not only a time frame that you enjoy trading, but one you have enough time to handle. If you don't put the right effort into it every night or every week, whatever the case may be, if your reach exceeds your grasp, you're not going to do the analysis that's required for you to succeed. Or if you get into any particular time frame for the wrong reason, you probably won't succeed. We talked about the lack of people in their younger years being here today. Well, they wanted to get into day trading for many reasons that had nothing to do with profit. Their friends were doing it. Software was like their video games, like their Nintendo sets. You know, there were a lot of other reinforcements going on at the same time. Let's talk about level two for a minute here. Level two, most people have seen past the delusion of level two by this point. It took a while, it took a couple years. But most people are not trying to base their lives on level two. Level two belongs to the scalping community. If you're new at trading, or if you've just been trading for a couple years, the chances are very, very good that scalping is not for you. Scalping is absolutely the worst place for new traders to be trying out their skills. Yet, if you take a look, jump on the web, and start looking at advertisements, you'll find that that's exactly what's being pushed on new traders these days, that they should become scalpers, that somehow it's easy. It's not. It's a very advanced trading strategy. Most folks should stay away from it until they have a proven track record doing other things. Many of you, I know the story, many of you are getting interested in trading because you're good investors. You're taking the next step in shortening your time frame up because you know how to make money in the market already. So you're trying to improve your returns by tightening up your time frame, starting to use market timing. Other ones of you have succeeded at being good position traders, and now you're interested in the intraday market. Yeah, you succeeded at position trading and holding stocks for 1, 2, 3 weeks, and now you want to try something a little different or something a little bit more challenging to see if he could flip stocks a little bit more and make a little bit higher return. Now, in the knowledge of the game, experience of the game, moves from the outside to the inside in terms of time frame, not from the inside to the outside. You know, today's scalpers aren't going to become tomorrow's investors unless they're forced to. You know, they're not going to naturally move in that direction. The natural way is to start with investing, understand economics, understand the markets, and move in closer until you get it. So picking your time frame. If you've got a full-time job somewhere else, chances are you should not be day trading. You know, my analogy of it's this. You know, a lot of us have access to the internet, so we figure we could probably slip an out of there in our E-Trade accounts or our MB Trading accounts, whatever, make trades during the day. And you know what? Your performance is so dependent on timing that just at the point you need to get out of a trade, your boss is going to be walking by and you won't be able to use the system. You're really taking a risk. You're exposing yourself by trading in a short time frame when you have other responsibilities during the day that may take precedence over your trading. Position trading, making decisions based on your daily chart, making decisions and buying stuff in the morning, perhaps even, you know, trying to improve your timing and you're putting in limit orders or getting into the market in the middle of the day, placing an entry and then putting a stop underneath it or over and walking away is the right way to go if your time is limited and you've got a life outside of the financial world. When we don't match up our strategy with our lifestyle, we mess ourselves up, and we mess ourselves up really, really badly. So you have to do a personality analysis on yourself. You got to do a time analysis on yourself. What are your other interests in life, and what are your obligations? Swing trading, somebody was asking me at lunchtime, I day trade now because I don't have the time for swing trading, which is a little counterintuitive. So day trading generally requires a tremendous amount of effort, more than other time frames. But experienced traders probably find that day trading takes up less of their time than swing trading. For me to swing trade, I'd have to have a lot more time at night. I'd have to do my research better. I'd be doing a lot more cross-verification than I do. I do cross-verification on the fly during the day on five-minute charts. But what my positions would really need in that time frame is to take the time to analyze them thoroughly and only choose how big are your watch lists, how big are the number of stocks that you're looking at. Can you look at thoroughly the number of stocks on your list every night? Or do you have so many things on your list that you don't know what half of them are doing at any given time? You got to be real good with numbers. You should know where Applied Materials closed on Friday if you're trading Applied Materials. Even if you weren't there during the day, you should know what the action was. So then on Monday, if you want to trade Applied Materials, you know what the price action was on the Friday before and last week and where the swivel points are. That, and this is just an example, I don't know if it's true or not, probably isn't, that, you know, Applied Materials made a high of 80, then it dropped down to 55, and that's at 65 and it's sitting above support. You want those numbers drilled into yourself so that you don't have to access them during the day if you're trading in that time frame. You got to be real good with your memory and the numbers, or have good crib sheets ready. Have those prepared so that you have your spreadsheets ready and you know exactly where to. So your brain isn't occupied with that during the day. You have to concentrate. If you're trading in the short term, you want to concentrate on your decision making, on your execution, on your position management. You don't want to be doing your analysis then. Your analysis should be done and out of the way. You should know, plan to know that if Applied Materials hit 70, you know what you're going to do because you have that planned out already. The difference between swing trading and longer term position trading. If you're fairly new, if you don't have the time, drop your beta down. Stick to lower beta stocks. You know, utilities were a great trade in August. Just a great trade. And you know what? You couldn't get really burned on them. They made real nice patterns, real nice pullbacks. They had real nice trends. And they went up 0.75 of a point a day. It wasn't CMGI. You know, it wasn't Amazon. But you still made money on it. You have the advantage of you could increase position size. You trade 1,000 shares of a utility versus 100 shares of CMGI, and you still make the same amount of money. You lower your transaction costs because you're doing less round trips, and especially you're learning the game. If you're if you buy a utility company, Carolina Power and Light, you walk away from the screen and come back 2 days later, you're not going to be in that much trouble, you know? But you'll be able to say, okay, it's starting to pull back. Where do I expect it to pull back into? Instead of having to make that decision over the next 5 minutes, maybe you've got 5 days to make that decision. So time frame is extremely important. Building a personal style is extremely important. Let's get started. want to say something about level two before I show you the first slide here. And that is, level two is an execution system. It's not a trading system. Don't trade with level two. Execute with level two. Go back to the analogy, go back to the accusation I just made about the brokers and the software vendors. They want you to use level two because that's how they make their money. They want you to believe it's a trading system. That's how they make their money. Level two shows you the crowd and shows you the size that you can trade against. It helps you improve your execution. You know whether you're going to get filled or not if you're using a direct access system, because you know if Island's sitting there and if you know if InstantNet's sitting there. But beyond that eighth of a point or a quarter point, right in that range, you can make very few predictions about where the market's going to move. Very few to none. Occasionally something will just line up perfectly and it'll say something. Level two is a liar's game, and they're lying to you. I know folks, I've traded level two. I use level two. You use it for execution. You go back 95, 96, when it became widely available and expensive, it was a very good trading system. When you had all the market makers lining up on the bid, there's a lot of demand, right? And lining up on the ask, there's a lot of supply. It worked, but it's become part of the common knowledge. There's absolutely no advantage to those folks who control that big size to tell you exactly what they're doing. They're hiding their size. And even the new rules of super montage and super sows are not going to make things that much better by the way I read them. They're still going to be able to hide their size from you. And as long as they're hiding their size, that's market moving size. You're not going to see it. So learn to trade using the stock charts. Learn to trade using the time and sales ticker. Tape readers are technicians. Somebody said, I don't use TA, I read the tape. It's exactly the same thing. It's a numbers game. Some people are better at visualizing. Some people are better for drilling numbers into their brain. They can watch a pulse of the tape and understand the complexity of price. Okay, let's go into strategy. You have two choices. And you really have no choice. It's really the same thing. You talk about swing trading versus momentum trading. People are naturally attracted to momentum trading because it looks like that's where the big moves are. It looks like that's where the profits are. But at heart, momentum trading is a form of swing trading. Momentum trading encompasses all the technical strategies that use price expansion on a stock chart, on a price chart. I won't leave the futures folks out. Swing trading comprises all of the strategies that use price expansion on a price chart. Swing traders don't trade momentum necessarily in the same way as pure, generic momentum traders. Swing traders try to control the risk before they get their gain. Momentum traders sometimes look at their gain, or most of the time, look at their gain before they try to control their risk. So swing traders try to buy pullbacks, try to sell bear rallies. Swing traders try to find low risk in sharp price expansion like a bar like that. Now tell me, who made money on this thing? If you bought that first bar at the end of the day, did you make any money on it? Very unlikely. When did that price move take place? That, from 16 up to 22, so that was a 6-point price move. Number one, you had the morning gap that took away how much of the profit? Took away the first 3 points of profit. That entire bar, that entire high, you don't know if it was made in the whole day, or it might have been made in the first 15 minutes of the day, which it quite often does these days, if you've noticed. And then you see it because it shows up on your alert screen, and you go, oh, breakout, and it's gone higher, and you go and buy the top, and you get stuck. You didn't get in too much trouble on this, but you didn't make any money either. But swing traders were probably, before this day, working the insides of that parallel price channel. They were able to pinpoint areas where they could fade the common direction. It's a classic swing trade. Classic swing trading, the narrow definition is to fade resistance to buy price. Fade short resistance, sell it resistance, buy it support. Classic swing trading made more money on this particular chart than classic momentum trading. Now, again, combining the two worlds, the best thing that could have happened to you as a broadened definition swing trader, someone who looked for opportunity wherever price bar expansion would exist, what would have been real, real nice, instead of that big gap right there, if price moved up to the very top of that parallel price channel and just hung there for a day or two. That would have been a signal, a narrow range, low risk signal that next bar was going to be a dandy. And universally, Breaks through support or resistance should be followed by price expansion. Wide range bar shooting out away from the resistance or from the support point. That's how you know it's right. You know, you worry about false breakouts. When that doesn't happen and the volume doesn't show up at those points, that's where you got danger. Okay, let's turn slides. I was getting a lot of questions about this slide from my students, and they say, "Well, what is it that you're trying to pinpoint here? What is it you're trying to say?" What I'm trying to say is, look how dangerous it is to buy new highs, new high breakouts. I'm saying when the market breaks out to new highs, it's not necessarily an opportunity unless a bunch of conditions are met. If you take a look at buying, let me get my pointer here. This is a gap to a new high over here. That's one thing. One of the things that the candlesticks allow you to see. It opened at the high and closed at the low. So you bought the morning gap, you're burnt. Over here, a gap to new high. Nice breakout here. Breakout through a double top. You bought the opening price, you're burnt. Third time, price breaks just barely to a new high. You've got a little bit here. Excuse me. There's a point and a half in there if you're a good person. Price reverses sharply off the new high and drops again. But you have to still recognize the shift. This is actually a negative feedback state, even though prices are making new highs. How do you know? You don't until it's all over with and you look back and went, all it was a rising wedge. It was a range that had kept making slightly newer highs as it went up. So it's a bearish thing, but this is actually a failure of a bearish range. In other words, a little rising wedge should eventually break and drop lower. This one actually turned out the other way, and that's just the way the odds play. But how do you know the positive feedback and negative feedback? Excuse me, how do you know that negative feedback is given away to a new trend? The signal, unfortunately, is another gap. Three times the gap's lied. One, two, and there's no gap here. Two times the gap's lied. This time the gap was telling the truth. So how do you know the difference? Could drive you crazy. You're conditioned to look at breakout gaps in the same way each time. But you had a little bit more information this time around. And if you're being counterintuitive, I think that the people who got burned here, here, and here, when this happened, just looked at it because they didn't believe it was happening. They said, oh, not again. That's your first signal to know that you should be doing it, though. almost always, that'd be your first signal. But what was it giving you? Technically, you had a technical breakout here. You had a technical breakout. That's the only piece of information that's different from the other piece. But number two, you've got contraction right here as well. You've got contraction right in the dead center middle of this range, which is the other neat place that it shows up all the time. You'll see over and over again, I don't know, it's not something I fully explored. Now you look for it, it'd be nice to see congestion right up here and then it breaks out. But a lot of times, if you could draw a support area and a resistance area, those tight bars will show up right in the middle, give you absolutely no warning, and just go. In its own weird logic, it's a neutral point. It's reached just a flat neutral point for that range. That range is over. But you have to be very smart to shift gears in terms of how you look at the market to pick up the opportunity. At the very least, you don't see this and you don't buy it. This is a morning gap that you should consider. Maybe you don't want to buy it right after the market opens. You're afraid it's going to fail back into here. But maybe if you're watching close enough, you see it starts to pull away from that point. When it pulls away from that point, and we don't have a lot of time to talk about how you analyze these morning gaps and how you figure out these over here are going to succeed and these over here are going to fail, but you may have had enough of a message, especially with this two-month break of a trend line. This is actually smaller cycles in here. These are about three-week cycles. This one breaks a trend line that's in place for 60 days. What's that, 9 weeks? Switch slides, please. Next. Oh, okay. We're talking about not using stochastics in trending markets, but that's not really true. Technical indicators form patterns by themselves, and if you could read those patterns, you actually could use them for trading. One of the best signals for stochastics, rollovers, are when they make little double tops and little double bottoms. Now, this is probably the best example of it right here. You know, our tendency is to think over here it's overbought. But if you take a look at where it went to overbought, that was where the whole trend took place. But you'll notice that stochastics often make these little rollover patterns. When they push up to overbought and start to break down, this is just a tremendous signal that a trend is breaking down, if you have your stochastic set properly. And it doesn't take a lot of effort to do that. I use a simple 5-period, a 5-3-3 for intraday charts. And I go longer. I only like longer-term views when I go to the daily charts. I use a 14-period, smooth on it. But rather than try to read an oscillator, which is what these are, try to read an oscillator when they shift from point A to point B or back again, the important place to look are the little patterns they make right here. Not necessarily the first crossover. In this case, some of the crossovers really worked well. But these little things. Were these little things? And again, it requires being late a lot of times and not jumping into a trade. Better off thinking you missed it and find out that the market's giving you an opportunity. You know, we tend to be early as traders when much of our profit depends on us being late. Because if we let it go and let the market come back to us, then we catch the fish a lot more consistently. Next slide. Oh. It's a volatility. I think we covered that. Let's go ahead. Next slide. Go back to the same tools we've talked about. One of my favorite patterns, we'll just throw this in on you, is double. We'll take a little market quirks, double symmetrical triangles. And there's another point on this slide, but double symmetrical triangles are almost always followed by another move of equal size to the move that took place before the first triangle. And gosh darn, this was just perfect too. It wasn't easy to trade for obvious reasons, but you'll see that many of them are extremely easy to trade and target. Okay, going over one more time, two double triangles, take the distance from the beginning of the trend to the first triangle. At this point, you target this distance, you add it on to this spot. This is a five-wave, Elliott five-wave move. It's a version of an Elliott five-wave move, and that's probably why it works. This slide is really about the cross-verification and why that point was such a great trade. The pullbacks come in many, many varieties. Talk about pullbacks to support. I'm talking about pullbacks to gaps. There's other kinds of pullbacks that are invisible to many, many traders. And it's really worth your while to understand and see where those are. So when they come up, you'll be able to take advantage of that. And then the other people will lead you out as the market reverses. Yeah?
You missed the hard right edge on that chart. What did you see?
Say what? What?
Does it address the hard right
edge? Oh, you're talking about that point right there? Exposure down to that point. Really, and so the second pullback, you've got exposure down to 17? Is that the number? Exposure down to 17? I mean, that's all I know about it. But I'll tell you, when you get, here's a little first failure event. These points we're talking about, support to return to an apex of a symmetrical triangle, is a very overlooked support point. That's very, very high percentage, tied in with a 62% moving average. Tied in with the 50-day moving average. Unfortunately, you don't know that this is a 38% retrace until after it makes the high. I happen to know that. That's 20/20 hindsight, just so you know. I'm aware of that. And this is a gap down day that pulls back up. But in terms of this point over here, it's broken the 50-day average on a closing basis. Here, it supported it, so you've got exposure there. And generally, these pullback points won't hold a second time. Something that one of Don Warden's notes, if anybody uses telecharts, something that I just wasn't aware of, to me, gravity exerts itself much stronger on the second test of any low than momentum exerts itself on the first test of any high. When a key support point is supported once and comes back again, odds are it's going to take it out and go. So the odds are against the trade. But if I was short that, I wouldn't want to stick around for a test of that. I'd be out. I'd love to get out just before it hit that low because the buyer's going to come in there. They always show up, whether they can reverse the market or not, at old highs and old lows because it looks like double bottoms. Or it looks like a double bottom to them. It looks like a low. There'll always be somebody coming in there. Let's go on to the next. Triple view. I think we covered this pretty well. Let's go on. three-dimensional view. Okay. Intraday traders and finding opportunity. You got to play with everything at your disposal. Intel, isn't that lovely? You have to play everything at your disposal during the day, and you got to keep your wits about you, and you got to draw lines wherever you can find them. I traded Intel this day like four times. I can't say that all of them were profits, but I think three of them were profits this day. And I tried to recreate the lines that I was drawing during that period of time for this thing. And you're using different aspects of the pattern cycles, different aspects of the formation of taking out of all support, coming back to support, creating what's just essentially a range pattern, a sideways a rectangle, trading through breakouts, pullbacks, creating trend lines, and using everything at your disposal to create a complex charting landscape that you could take positions from. Those trend lines will be gone in a day or two. They won't be important. But for the day that you're trying to find a point of entry, you need to use those points in order to take advantage of them. Okay, let's move on. Change from uptrend into downtrend. Again, a classic trade is a breakout through a descending trend line. You combine your functions. Excuse me. You combine your. I'm going to get my brain straight here in just a second. Okay, I guess my point was the pullback, which we've already talked about. This is also an ability to see clearly things that are not so obvious. Is the cup and handle over here real obvious to people? Can you see that? I don't know if you can see that or not. That's a cup and handle. And this is over as a daily chart. Yeah, it's a legitimate cup and handle. One of the rules I use, and it doesn't always work, but it works best with horizontal resistance. Sloping resistance is a little bit different, like a rising or falling trend line. Never buy the first test of a new high. Always buy the second test of a new high. Never buy the first test of a new high. Always buy the second test of a new high. When something comes up to test it, here's a new high, okay, in that time frame. Here's a high. Pulls back, comes up and tests it. As soon as price comes up to that point, there's always a supply of sellers who got burned the last time price went up to that point. There's always a supply of short sellers who want to get in because they know they could fade resistance at that point. The drop off the second high takes those people out of the market. When the market's able to respond to that, and you'll often see a much smoother pattern than this, when the market's able to respond to those last wave of sellers, the game shifts over to the buyers again. Now the buyers have the advantage because the sellers have been taken out of the market. So when it comes up for the third time, there's not nearly as much resistance. That's the basis of the classic cup and handle breakout. Now, I've read O'Neill's rules on that thing a few dozen times, and it's brilliant. Unfortunately, it only pertains to a single time frame, has very, very narrow rules, when cup and handles are legitimate trades in all time frames, and they take on so many appearances. Sometimes you'll see, one of the classic things you'll see is this pullback to 62%. I don't think it made it. It's probably about 50%. A 62% retracement back of this little trend right here before it starts to roll and come back. In this particular case, it just came down. I guess it's a 20-period Bollinger Band. I'm not even sure. But when it turns the corner, that's where you're looking. When that thing turns the corner and this little downtrend here is broken, you can actually go in and buy that thing. You could actually go in and buy that thing for a fairly high percentage trade because the odds have shifted back in the buyer's favor, and now you should expect a breakout from that point rather than to fade off of that level. And I've seen things. I mean, you'll see, you talk about fractals and fractal markets. A lot of times you'll see a little cup and handle right now. You'll break down, go down to a 5-minute chart, and you'll look at it real close, and there'll be a little tiny cup and handle within the cup and handle. It's the strangest thing. It's like the market's just printing these little same cellular patterns over and over again, you know, on that level. Okay, let's go on to the next one. One of the reasons that a 3-day swing, they call it the 3-day swing, and why 1 to 3 days has been an established range for swing trading, if that's what you choose to do, is that the market tends to move in 3-day cycles. I think we talked about going back to the Taylor trading technique from the 1950s. The markets show 3 days of buying interspersed with 3 days of selling, with interspersed with 3 days of contraction, on and on and on and on. one of the difficulties is people want hard and fast rules, and so they try to apply this thing to exact three-day swing. Then the market has a two-and-a-half-day cycle or a three-and-a-half-day cycle or a four-day cycle, and it messes them up because it doesn't drop in according to their expectations. What the need is, if you're trading in this time frame, is to find the beginning of a swing and the end of a swing. And you do that by and I'm talking just a swing, a single direct price move. I'm not even talking about where it went afterwards. A swing is one trend that breaks into a little congestion. That's all we're talking about. It could be a trend breaking to congestion and reversing, but what you're trying to do is capture two or three bars off of the thing and get out. Now, very early on, if you're trading this breakout from Apple, which is also an Adam and Eve reversal, I don't know if you can see that, we have a sharp, highly volatile first bottom followed by a soft second bottom, low volatility second bottom on many more bars. You have the breakout point, which is easy enough to get in. If you choose to buy that gap that day, I probably wouldn't touch this thing on this little bar here, but sometimes those hammers are a very good indication as well, just like narrow range bars, that a breakout's about to happen because you have this expansion bar, price pulls back a little bit, and then buyers jumped in there before the closing to bring it right back up to the breakout point. So I suppose if you were ambitious, you could have taken that. But this is the type of gap you want to buy because of where it occurs. Location, 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 just like real estate. Gaps, the location of gaps are very, very important. When they occur right where you expect them to, on good volume, when they occur, you can't see that there's an expansion bar until the end of the day, but when they take place exactly when you expect them to and where you expect them to, that's an indication that that gap's going to hold. Now, you have plenty of time to buy in here. Your risk is only back to that point, which is, what, 34.5? The market opens at 35. You could have taken a new highs during that day up to about 35.5. You only have about one and a half point exposure. There's not a lot of money to make on this trade, but once you're in the thing, can everybody see why you had to get out, where you had to get out? It's real important in choosing your profit targets before you're in the trade and knowing, okay, I could get in here, but I know how much reward I'm going to get out of this trade. I don't know if somebody, can everybody see it? Should I point it out? I mean, it's really obvious. You take a look back at this old high over here. Look at that monster. This is a pretty ugly high. I don't expect the market to go and break to new highs. I'm not taking that swing trade for a break to new highs. I'm taking the swing trade for this breakout. I want to get out at the first resistance, and I want to lead the crowd out the door. I don't want to wait until they go, oh, the market's not rising anymore. Maybe I should get out too. Especially if you're dropping down to a 60-minute chart or 5-minute chart, if you're not standing just a little bit ahead of the crowd going into major resistance, you're going to lose half your profit, all of your profit. Market's going to turn on you. The bids are going to dry up, and you're not going to be able to get out. Yeah?
So your swing trade is not a daily swing trade. You're going on a 3-day time?
I'll go back to what I said earlier. Swing trading is time frame independent. And we're talking some about choosing which time frame you want to act in, but you're still a swing trader as long as you use the principles of breakout, support and resistance, three-dimensional charting, and this kind of thing. You're still a swing trader if it's a 5-minute chart or a daily chart. This example specifically refers to a 3-day swing in a 3-day swing. Is there a 3-period swing? Yeah? Do you know about the 9:45 reversal? The third bar reversal in the morning? Take a look. Take a look what happens on that third bar. Go back a few weeks. Take a look what happens on the third bar when the market opens in the morning. There is a 3-day swing, a 3-period swing, a 3-bar swing in the market, in intraday markets. Does it always operate that way? No. It stretches and squeezes. There's a 90-minute alternation cycle in the intraday markets. A 90-minute alternation cycle as well. That's based off S&P futures. There's a well-established cycle of 90 minutes of buying pressure, then 90 minutes of selling pressure, then 90 minutes of buying pressure during the day. And it compresses and expands, but you'll see that. You see it in the NYSE tick. Great place to watch. Don't even look at it. You don't have to see it in the futures. You can see it in the futures. Look at NYSE tick and how it cycles back and forth during the day between buying pressure and selling pressure. So there are quirks that pertain to the individual or the intraday market versus a daily market, but overall the concepts are the same. If this is on a 5-minute chart, I'd still be getting out there.